Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to episode number 154 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Jim Person.
And I'm Bob DeMarco. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. You know the place right here, the Knife Junkie Podcast, where we get to talk to anybody and everybody in the knife world, the knife makers, the knife designers, the manufacturers, the reviewers, anyone who loves knives. That's what we're all about here on the Knife Junkie Podcast, our weekend Sunday interview show. And Bob, who are you having the pleasure of chatting with today?
Today I'm speaking with the purveyor of Asher Knives, Justin Cotton. They make affordable EDC knives with premium design and premium materials. And I'm not sure how they do it, but they get some pretty amazing knives to market. And we're going to find out how they do it today. So,
yeah, we're going to find out in just a second when you interview Justin Cotton of Asher Knives. That's coming up. But first, I do want to remind you that our podcast today is brought to you in part by the Get Upside app. It's a way for you to save money on your gas purchases. Just get the Get Upside app. Go to thenifejunkie.com/saveongas, thenifejunkie.com/saveongas. You can download that app on your smartphone, either Android or Apple, and you can start saving money anytime that you need to purchase gas. I use it every single time that I purchase gas. It's a great way to save money, and hopefully you will start too.
Ever start looking for your next knife purchase before your last purchase has even arrived? Then you're probably a knife junkie.
It's true. I do. Justin Cotton of Asher Knives, welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. So yeah. You've kind of just come onto my radar recently, but in a strong way. There are a lot of guys out there who review knives who are checking out your work and singing your praises highly. I got a couple of models in hand, three, from Justin over at Tier One. We know him a lot. He comes on our Thursday Night Knife Show a lot, and he loaned me three knives, and they're very impressive. Tell me, how did you get into this knife business?
I've always been a knife guy. I mean, my whole life, I've always loved pocket knives, and really, I got into it because I'm sure a lot of people have gone through this. I've ordered a lot of knives, and I never was able to find the one knife that it was just like perfect, it was the one knife that ended them all for me. And everybody, it's called the Grail, obviously, and everyone's looking for that knife. So whenever my son was born, I'm in real estate. That's my main job. And when my wife had to go back to school after he was born, I had a lot of time because newborns sleep a lot. So I figured it was time to, it would give me time to try to, design my first knife and bring it to fruition. And I started from square one. Really, I mean, I had no idea, how to have them manufactured, how to have, who to go to for design, where I even had to start. So I spent quite a few months really just figuring out what I had to do to, what steps were needed to be taken to have those knives made. And the first one I made was the classic that you have there. Yeah. And I have mine as well. And this is like my baby, this is the very first one. So I actually designed this with an old manila folder. I cut out the pieces and used toothpicks as pivot points. And, I was lucky enough to find a really great CAD designer in Kansas. And I went back and forth with him because I'm not an expert in CAD. And I figured instead of me trying to learn how to be proficient and an expert in CAD, I could find someone that knows what he's doing and he could really help me out. So, I started working with him. It took us about 2 months to really nail down the design. And I learned a lot in that 2 months. There's a lot of things that you have to factor in whenever you do a folding knife. And, once we had it done, then I had the step file, to send out to a manufacturer. That was hard as well to find a trustworthy manufacturer that kind of understood what I was going for. And it started out in Taiwan. Actually, I had a really great smaller shop in Taiwan. They did a fantastic job. I mean, they did a really great job. That took about 45 to 90 days to from start to finish, from me sending it to them to me getting the finished product. But it was a real great learning experience for me. And I've learned how to kind of streamline that process from these the next three that I put out.
Okay, so let's back up. You're a knife guy, obviously. Yeah, and you have extra time on your hands because you've got a newborn, your wife's at school, house is quiet, you know, for large stretches of time.
Yeah.
So I've been in that situation twice. But I've
congratulations.
Never, thank you. Thank you. And I've been a knife junkie that whole time, but and drew quite a bit of designs. Never made that extra step. What is that one step, that one little kernel that got you to take it from something that you're just interested in to something that you're like, wait a second, I'm going to stake something on this and make knives?
Well, first of all, I was lucky enough to do pretty well in real estate to the point where I had a little bit of capital that I was able to put towards this. So that's number one. I mean, if you don't have the capital to do it, it's really hard to do. I mean, you can go on, you know, Kickstarter and do it that way. And there's been a lot of successful knives. Might be the smarter way to do it because you've already had, you know, customers and, you know, they've already bought your knife. So I sort of took a bigger risk in producing them and then hoping that I'd find customers afterwards. So some people would say that was dumb. It's the way that I went with it. But really the first step was actually finding something that works. You know, whenever I found the designer and said, okay, I could, you know, I could put this into a file for you and I could design a, you know, the knife that you want to make. I could put it in a digital file so you could send it off to the, you know, the manufacturers. Once I was able to get that piece down, then that kind of gave me a drive to move on to the next step, which was, you know, finding the manufacturer. And again, I had no idea where, you know, I went to Google to find, you know, I typed in knife manufacturers, Taiwan, China, everywhere. And it's really hard to figure that out if you don't have someone telling you what to do or, you know, where to even start to look. So that was also a pretty big situation because I was sending them money, you know, without really knowing. And, you know, I mean, he's halfway across the world and they have to be, I have to trust that they're a trustworthy business.
So did you have a mentor through any of this? Did you have anyone? No.
Yeah. Okay. It would have been easier.
So you are the mentor. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I've always felt that learning, on the job, you know, if you could figure it out as you go, it makes it a lot easier down the line. And if anybody has any questions about that, I'm always more than happy to guide them in the direction so they don't have to take this, you know, they don't have to take the steps that I had to take to get to that point.
Okay. So you decide I'm going to make a knife. This is going to be a reality. And the first knife that you make is the classic, which of the three knives I've been sent, man, I adore it. Like I was telling you before we started rolling. I come in and out periodically of a traditional knife collecting phase. And whether or not I'm in one, this would appeal to me for that purpose. It has a profile and an obvious purpose to it that harkens to that stuff. So tell me how you decided on this style of knife and then the process you went to through with this designer in Kansas to come up with a design for this.
So I love classic knives. You know, I've always loved the Barlow. You know, the Barlow has been, if I could carry that conveniently, I would probably carry a Barlow all the time. But, you know, I love the shape. I love to have it. My grandfather, you know, my dad's father, or grandfather, I got two Barlows from him that were so, now it's patina, you know, but he used it so much and he had these knives for so long. And I wish I wouldn't have got them so young because I lost them and it drives me crazy, you know, but that always stuck in my mind, you know, that this kind of shape. And I was really specifically looking for a Barlow type knife that was a little bit more updated that I could actually carry every day. And I started thinking about the things that I like in my other knives that I got and, you know, the ball bearings to make it easier to flip open. The thumb studs to make it easier, the pocket clip, obviously, titanium. So I really tried to incorporate those in the classic style. And really what I did was, like I said, when I took a manila folder and cut out the pieces for it, and I took a photo of that and I sent it to the designer, and he was able to take that and put a rough sketch in. And then we went back and forth to really refine it. And, I ended up with this. I was really happy.
So, you get the design, you have the, whatever the CAD file is, and you've selected your manufacturer, at this point. And I'm not sure, and we'll get to this, but if I forget, remind me. I'm not sure if all your knives are made from the same people, but you find the people to make that. Okay. No, you find the people to make this, you get the design off. Then how does it go down?
So I send my file to them. I run it sort of like the real estate business as well. You know, I do the things that I know how to do, and then I leave. I hire people. I try to hire people that can give me the best quality, and they're professional, so I leave it to them. So when I send this to the manufacturer, in Taiwan, I have to think that they're professional. They know what they're doing. They've done this more times than I have. So if there's any little tweak that needs done, instead of me trying to figure that out, they look at the design and say, okay, well, this would work better if you did, if you put the clip here, or, if you put the screws down here. And I trust them to know how to do that. And, that, again, that takes a bit of trust, whenever you're dealing with somebody that you've never really met. You never met in person, obviously, but you've never really talked to over the phone. It's a lot of emails back and forth. But whenever it comes, whenever you get the final design, if it looks exactly or as close as you can to your original, rendering, and you're happy with the product, you're happy with the outlook, and if they're able to get it even, as close as possible as the rendering that they send you, that's a win. In my book, from what I've found with the other knives, sometimes there's little variations whenever you actually get the knife, from just the rendering.
Like the prototypes, when you get the prototypes back?
Yeah, exactly. When you get the prototypes back, you want everything to be perfect, but it really never is. You get real excited about it, and then you get the prototype, you're like, oh man, this angle of the grind isn't right, or it's not opening correctly. We have to fix that. Or there's a lot of different little things that you have to make sure that are right before you make that. If you place that large order for them to ship it over, because once you place it, the money's gone, and you kind of just hope that you have a great, a great product to sell to people.
And it's going to be exactly like that last iteration, last prototype. So you better get it dialed in. I got to say, though, to me, having the material thing, having the prototype, could be that thing that bridges any sort of language gap that there might be. I'm sure the Taiwanese manufacturers have people who are speak English better than you and I, but at the same time,
almost there. Yeah, almost there.
They speak better than my Taiwanese or Chinese, whatever. But to have it in hand and be able to say, a little bit off the top or whatever.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's really hard to, when you're looking at something, you're like, how do I communicate this over email? It's a lot of pictures and circling areas and trying to tell them what you mean, because, I'm sure as well. You look at different knives and you're like, well, there's just something that I don't like about this, or there's something that I would have changed. And how do you put that into words, especially with someone that doesn't speak English as their first language? It's not easy.
and also, this was your first time out. And, you have people in the knife business saying, this is how it's done. I could see how you could feel the pressure to say, okay, maybe leave that thumb stud the way it is, or whatever it happens to be. But obviously you got over any of that quickly. These, the three knives I have, and then looking on your website, show a real confidence of design and purpose. When you set out to start Asher Knives, and you told me before we started rolling, Asher is the name of your son. I think that is awesome.
Yeah.
So cool to name your company after your son. Maybe someday it'll be Asher and Sons.
Yeah, Asher and Sons. Yeah,
that would be great. Your grandchildren, if you think about it. But in any case, So you went from this design, which is a very confident, traditionally inspired modern folding knife, and then you move on to the other ones I have in hand are the Silva.
Yes.
This is a titanium frame lock folder featuring an S35VN blade that's beautifully ground. And then you have the Nomad and the Sentry. And then this fixed blade, which I want to talk about in a minute, that I did not see on your website. But so where does the design inspiration come, and how do you decide? Let me ask you that just first. Yeah. Where does the design inspiration for these come from?
I would have to say over the course of my owning various different knives, the thoughts in my head were, you know, every time that I didn't like something about the knife or something that I really liked about the knife, but it could have added something differently. Or again, it's one of those things that's kind of hard to put into words, but I knew that I like just that for the Nomad. Okay. I knew that I really liked the draw point, you know, draw point blade. I wanted to pick the best steel that I could within my budget, that I could comfortably, you know, put out that capital, and I feel comfortable enough that I'd be able to get a return, enough of a return from those knives that I would be able to go out and, you know, do another design and another design. That's the one thing I regret about the classic is I use D2 steel. I love D2 steel. It's a good all around work steel, but it caps the amount that you could sell, you know, this knife for. Now, if this knife was in, you know, S35 or, you know, if it was in M390, which would be awesome, I'd be able to sell it for a lot more because this was very expensive to produce. And that's one of the things you learn, you know, on your first go around is you really have to make sure that you leave yourself some, just enough of a gap that you're able to make it a profitable enough business that you can cover the cost for the materials and you can go and, you know, make more designs and keep doing that. Cause I have a ton of designs in my head. But you have to have the capital to make them a reality.
Well, that's a really interesting, conundrum. It's like, I could spend more money on a higher end steel in the manufacture of it and risk, being out a huge bundle, or I could spend less on a totally great steel. D2 is an awesome steel.
Yeah.
And, but not have the cred to charge, you know, what I might need to recover the cost or make the profit.
That's the thing. I mean, I had no credibility at all, and I still don't think I have a crazy amount of credibility. You know, I'm just starting out. And the people that have really welcomed me in the EDC community and the you know, the knife community, really, it's been humbling, really, because I came out of nowhere. You know, I could be anybody, but I found that if I'm open and honest with people, and I never thought that I'd have the back and forth that I would with customers, with all the people that, you know, comment on Instagram and Reddit. Reddit's a little bit harder than Instagram for sure. But I never thought I'd be so involved in talking to these people. But really, you find that there's a lot of great people, number one, in the EDC and knife community. And if you give them a decent product, they'll back you. You know, they'll back you with their hard-earned money, and, you know, they'll take pictures of your knife and say how much they like it. But that's a big risk whenever you're, you know, just starting out. I'd love to make a great knife, M390, micarta, you know, handles, but if no one buys it because they don't know your company, you know, it could be a great knife, but, you know, then I'm sitting on a boxes of awesome knives and my wife's killing me because we haven't sold them. So,
well, you can always trade them for food after the world ends.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be better than gold.
Well, I mean, really, like, I think the knife community, I think knife people, the EDC community, they recognize one of their own. They know people who are enthusiastic versus people who are trying to turn a buck. And my God, if you're trying to turn a buck in the knife world, man, reorient your aim and try something else, probably like real estate or you know, investing or something. Yeah, to try and pull a fast one in the knife world is insane to me.
They'll spit you up real fast. Yeah, they'll chew you up and spit you out real fast. I mean, it was a rocky start as well. You know, whenever I started, it just seems like everyone's so skeptical of you already, no matter what.
But let me finish the thought. The thought is, sure, it's obvious that you're a guy who already has a passion for this stuff. So you're not trying to put out garbage. You know, you're designing nice stuff, and you have you know, you're swimming in the same waters. You know what kind of materials people want.
Yep.
And you're producing this work, and I think people will get behind you. And I think what most people in your position benefit most from is being nimble and being able to hear feedback and be like, oh yeah, okay, on the next iteration, I'll do this, this, and this. And
I love that.
So who are the knife makers and who are the companies, the knife models, whatever, that inspire you, that, you know, that get you excited outside of your own work?
I have to be straight. Every time I see a TRM, Three Rivers Manufacturing knife, Adam, I love that design. See, there it is. I appreciate knives that are, they're not flashy. You know, they're built for a purpose, and they look like they're built out of quality materials that are going to last for a long time. I always think to myself, if I'm going to be stuck in a car, you know, if I get stuck in a car, stuck in the woods, and I have my knife in my pocket, is that knife going to be able to handle the task that I might need it for? And TRM seems to be, you know, an Adam. I've never held one myself, but, I just love every time I see one. It's great. I like those the most, actually.
I'm sorry, I just have to concur. I just got this 2 weeks ago. I traded a Medford and got this.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it.
If I was a huge knife guy, I mean, if I was a really big, you know, bulky knife guy, I would love the Medford. You know, it looks like they're overbuilt. And if I was stuck out in the woods, I could definitely chop down a tree with one of those. It would be great. Yeah. It'd be great to have. But for my purposes, the Adam would probably be it.
Okay, so I want to talk about the other model I have. Well, I have three models, but I want to talk about this model, the Silva.
Yes.
This also is a titanium frame lock, and it also features, well, this one features S35, as you mentioned. This is D2. But this knife is very beautifully designed. It's simple, but it's got some flash to it. What I love is the neutral handle. It's got a handle that is very, very comfortable. But
very comfortable.
But it allows for, you know, many different kinds of grips. And it's not, you know, it doesn't force you into anything, any sort of posture. What was your, and by the way, beautiful swedge.
I'm a swedge. Thank you.
So what was your, what were you hoping to, what was your goal for this knife?
That's exactly it. I mean, really, I wanted to have a higher, you know, a higher end knife with the materials that, you know, that I use in the classic a little bit. I wanted to go a step further. I wanted to go a little bit bigger, since I think more people, you know, the classic works for a lot of people, but it might be a little bit small for most, if you wanted to have them use it every day. So I wanted to go a little bit bigger. I usually like to stay between the 7.3 and 7.5 overall length. And I'll probably all of the next three designs that are coming out, they're all the same size. So that's really what I was going for. Something that was very minimal and comfortable, you know, comfortable to use. You could always, you know, people love the action when you open it. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, I'm trying to find every hot point that somebody, when they're looking for a knife, would say, oh, wow, you know, it's nice looking, but it has to have crappy action, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that it has great action. Someone's going to actually use this. You know, I don't want it to be just a knife that someone buys and says, wow, that looks cool, and then not use it. You could go out and, you know, you can go out in the woods with this one and use it just the same as any other your hard use knives, and it'll perform. That's really it's funny. A lot of people talk about the flipper tab, how it's rather large, and it is, but it serves two purposes, really. Number one, for the easy action, and number two, it's for the you know, the guard. I wanted it to have it as a guard, because when you're cutting something, I mean, you want a little bit of guard. And it works out perfectly that way, and I think it looks good. I mean, that's just my preference.
It does look good. It looks a little shark like which is cool. I have never been been bothered by large flipper tabs. Only flipper tabs whose design isn't optimized for flipping the knife open.
Right.
I want to tell you about some of the observations I've made about this knife.
Sure.
First of all, you have a filler tab on the offhand side, the left hand side, or if you put your deep carry pocket clip, which is a very nice clip, on the other side. Hey, you're welcome. You've got the filler tab. That's a little. That's kind of a premium touch, if you will.
I'm left-handed.
Ah.
Yeah, I'm left-handed, so I can't not do it. You know, from the left-hand out there.
Good for you. You should have just put the lock on the other side and make us learn how to. You know.
Yeah. That would be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, let's see how many people would really learn that.
So you've got a very nicely, everything is very comfortable in the hand. It's beautifully chamfered. It's very solid. It's thin. A lot of people like thin. I'm a big knife guy. So I go, I like thin for in the waistband. I like, you know, so I can go. So this is thin. It's very light. You've got a lock bar, stabilizer slash, lock bar insert, you know, insert, so that it feel on steel at the lock bar interface. It's got S35VN, and 6AL4V, presumably titanium. I think that's the only titanium anyone uses for.
Yeah.
And what do you charge for this knife?
Yeah, this one is, so originally it was $98.50. And here's the secret. I'm able to offer a lower price for all of my knives because I don't have the overhead that all of the other companies have. Really, I mean, it's me dealing with it. I pack every knife, you know, I inspect every knife before I send them out. I do all the designing. I, you know, if you order the upgraded clip for the knife, I'm the one who takes it off and puts it on. You know, I'm the one who makes sure that the blade centered, you know, and I don't have the overhead that a lot of people have. And that was my advantage coming into this market, that I was able to get the better quality steel and the better quality materials for knives and still keep them lower because I don't have, you know, a bunch of people that I have to pay to do the quality control and everything else. Now my family helps me out a lot as well. And God bless my wife because she's, you know, she stood behind me. And whenever I told her about this, she thought I was crazy. You know, who does this? But she's, and we had a, you know, a newborn and he was almost one by the time I got this, but, that was a big ask on my end. And she, you know, probably rolled her eyes a few times, but you know, she went with it and, God bless her for it.
Yeah, but man. Right on.
That's my secret.
Thank God for the supportive spouse.
Yeah, you're lucky.
they say babies are born, and I think this is a Bolivian saying, but babies are born with a loaf of bread under their arm, meaning you have a baby and it puts a fire under your ass. You're like, what else am I going to do? Okay, I got this real estate thing humming. What else?
What else? True. I mean, that was the only time. It was a risk for sure, but it seemed like the right time to take that risk. You know, if I was ever going to do it, I do it now, and I'm a little bit impatient anyway. So it was something that's always been in my head, and I'm sure you might be the same way. That I figured I'll just try it now, and if it works out, then great. If not, I could say I tried it, and you know, tell my son, hey, I named the company after you. You can go anywhere, but I named them after you, and I can give him the you know.
Hopefully, you're not a failure too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We made a time capsule for his 18th birthday, and I put a classic in the time capsule for him just to, you know, remind him. So
I'm sorry, but that's very cool. On his 18th birthday, he's going to be, not only do I get to open this thing, but I get a knife out of it. And
that's right. Yeah. His mom might, you know, not be so happy about that, but yeah, I'm going to give him his knife on his 18th birthday for sure.
So on your folders, you use, frame locks, and then you also use the Axis style lock, the ambidextrous bar lock, whatever you want to call it. So how did you decide on those two locking mechanisms?
Well, you know, everybody loves the Axis style lock. So a lot of the things that I put into the, you know, my folders, I do have to keep in mind what everybody loves, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you look on Instagram, you know, all the pictures that people post, I have to think what do people like? What are the features that people like? You know, they like nice G10. Now it's my Carta, but you know, they like nice G10 handles. They like more solid, you know, a solid knife that they can take and, you know, beat up a little bit and it still works great. And they like the Axis lock. And I'll be honest with you. I don't think, I don't think I'll be doing the Axis Lock for much longer after this, after these models. Number one, I like the frame lock best of all. That's just my preference. And I have a model coming out, probably two months. It'll be ready. It's the Nomad with a frame lock, basically. And yeah, so there's a steel side, G10 side with the frame lock. And I just like it, to be honest. And I include two extra Omega springs, Omega style springs. Yeah. The thing that I don't like, and our springs are, I make sure that they're a little bit, thicker. So they're stronger, because I know that they tend to break. And yeah,
never happened to me, but I hear talk.
Yeah. I hear people talking about it all the time that they have them break. And to be honest, I don't think I'd want that in my knife that I'd depend on for, it could be depending on it for a life situation. And I know that they're strong, but it still has that ability to break at some point.
Yeah, you're relying on something that's so, it's like everything on the head of a pin. It's like civilization hinging on electricity. Well, what happens if electricity goes away?
Everything goes crazy.
And plus, with a frame lock in particular, your grip reinforces the lock.
Yeah.
In a way that no other lock really does that, except the Scorpion lock, but you'd have to license from Mr. Demko.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you have it nailed, because people also like their knives as fidget items.
I didn't think about fidget factor whenever I was starting this out. I didn't think that was such a big part of selling knives, the fidget factor.
It's kind of embarrassing to admit. It's a real thing, though,
It is.
And luckily, you intuitively honed in on that. That is cool. That is the, what is that called? That's not the Nomad. That's the.
No, this is the, this is the Sentry, and this is the one with, bearings. So it doesn't really come up. Yeah, it's the gray with the white backspacer there. Yeah. And
you sell extra on the website. You can get your white backspacer, which is cool.
On bearings, I love it. I mean, really, this is how it was supposed to be. When I first started, so I made my first order, and talk about crazy. I made my first order, and there was a language barrier issue whenever I placed the order. So I was marketing these as, ball bearing. I get the shipment in. I take apart the first knife, and washers fall out, and I almost died. Really, I didn't sleep that night, and it was terrible. I had to tell everybody that pre-ordered, everyone that ordered a knife. Everyone basically that, hey, this doesn't have bearings. I know you're excited about bearings, but it doesn't have bearings. I'll give your money back. And a lot of people, and I'm sure Peter Hartman, a therapeutic edge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's been a great guy. He was like, he emailed me. He's like, really, I know that's got to be tough. I'll still take the one with the washers and try it out. And he's been a big, supporter of me, starting out. Yeah.
Tell me true. How many people said, no, I don't want it if it doesn't have bearing?
Not one. Yeah. I was really surprised. Yeah.
That feels so good to hear. And I was going to be like, no one's that fickle. Unless
they are.
they're out of the money and they're like, I don't want to tell this guy I don't have the money to pay him. Well,
yeah, not one. I was lucky. Because believe me, my hair grew gray overnight, just from that situation. It was rough.
How did it work on the bearings?
So this new shipment that'll be in actually this week, I'll be fully in stock with the bearings.
I'm sorry. But, I mean, how did it work on the washers?
It wasn't great to start, to be honest, because it didn't have the action that I really wanted it to have. And I just kicked myself because I didn't know everything that I should have known at that point. Whenever I got those and I was selling them. So I'd send them out to people. I'd get emails back saying, hey, I love the knife. I love, the design, the blade is super sharp, but the action, when I flip it, I would flip it and it would like end like right here. It would never fully, cause it was so tight. So then I actually placed a large order for bronze, phosphor bronze washers, replaced those. It worked well, but then there was blade play. There was always blade play.
little bit.
So I was going crazy trying to figure this out. You know, I would sit there and work with a knife, and there would be no play at all. You know, it'd be perfect, open, shut. I'd send it to somebody, and they'd email me back saying, hey, this is a great knife, but there's blade play. What can I do about it? So I'm like, you know, is the mailman screwing me over, or what? Like, what's going on here? But I finally figured out that that I use Teflon washers now in the original ones. They give people, because phosphor bronze, you have to break in. I mean, you have to break them in for, you know, it takes like 2 weeks of flipping back and forth. And some people just are, you know, they're not patient enough for that. So if you don't open it out of the box and it's like flippy and perfect, then they contact me. They're, you know, they want a new one, or they want me to help them out. And I want to, you know, I want them to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'll bend over backwards to make the customers happy. I don't care if they're paying, you know, I do a lot of coupon codes to give people deals so they can try the knife out. And I don't care if they, you know, got 50% off of the knife. I'll, you know, if they have a problem with it, I'll send them a new one. And sometimes I let them keep, you know, the one that they have if I can't, you know, if it doesn't make sense for me to take it back and I can't resell it. So I just say, hey, you know, use that knife as a beater. And then, you know, if you like another model that comes out, think about, you know, purchasing one, you know, from me. Yeah. And they do. And that people are happy with that.
Let me ask you about the design. If you would hold up the Sentry for a second. If you look at the Sentry compared to, say, the Nomad and the Classic and the Silva,
yeah.
The Nomad, something with the harpoon and the Fuller, there's something about this design that seems to be striving for something different.
Yeah. I was scared to death to produce this thing.
I think you nailed something here.
Yeah.
What were you looking at to do with this one?
So I was able, you know, if I'm able to get four fingers on it and put my thumb here. So when I'm, you know, carving wood, or if someone were to, you know, open a box, you know,
mm-hmm.
The Fuller is really just a design choice. It doesn't serve much other than looking sweet.
It lightens the blade, though. That's also good.
It does. Yeah, it lightens the blade. It does. But really, it just adds to the character of the blade. And it's different because I haven't seen it. I hadn't seen it anywhere, you know. And I just, with this handle shape, it just seemed like it was, as soon as they gave me the rendering, after I, you know, I gave them all my information and told them what I was looking for and gave them the design cues. When I got the rendering back, I was like, oh man, that's going to be fantastic. I mean, I really did. I loved the way it looked, but I was nervous because it was so different that, you know, what if people say, wow, is that ugly?
No. It's the same, yeah. Different. It's in the same galaxy, but it's got those couple of extra flourishes, the thumb swale. I love that.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, intuitively you want to jam your thumb into that and really get some power. And I'm a sucker for a Fuller. It also looks like, I look at that, I'm like, you could Spidey flick with that. You know, I'm sure you have a bunch of people doing that too.
Yeah.
So where do you see your knives going in terms of design? First, let's talk about the folders.
Yeah. So everything that I'm going to make, and I could send you, you know, the three that are coming out over the next three, you know, 4 months. The one that's coming out, I should get the 20 samples of them sometime next week or the week after that. And it's called the Spiro. You know, it's a liner lock with, you know, the G10 with the hidden liners, you know, inside the G10. Mm-hmm. S35VN, a bigger, you know, a thicker blade, kind of still a drop point style blade. But every knife that I want to make is one that you would feel confident in having in your pocket, no matter what would pop up. It's kind of hard to do, I guess, and I'll keep trying, you know, and every model I'll try to, you know, keep that in mind. But I'm not fancy. I don't carry fancy knives, you know. I carry a Nomad like pretty much every day, and I'm in property management, so I have caulking, you know, I have stuff all over the G10. I really want to give a knife that you don't care about, you know, screwing up. You know, your hands full of caulk. That sounds terrible. Yeah, your hands full of caulking, and you know, you don't mind using it. and you don't mind, you know, you just using it day to day. And that's really what I'm shooting for. And something that's solid, and they hold it and say, wow, this feels great. You know, I'm happy that I purchased it is really the ultimate goal. I'm happy that I purchased the knife.
So I surmised all of that, except I would add to your assessment of your own goal that you want to do it in like with the highest quality materials, because everything you're saying, like, yes, of course. But for the price point, yeah, titanium and S35, it's great. And much earlier, we were talking about, you know, how you fund, these and that, oh, maybe it's a fool's errand to fund your own, effort like that. But I think there are a number of ways of looking at it. In a sense, you know, immediately I think I put things in my own context. You're like a TV producer. You're like a film producer. You're taking, yeah, you know, you're using your own design, but you're taking all the best people, putting them together to make the product that you can for what you're going to charge. But,
right,
the fact that you're doing it, in such a way that A, you're a knife guy and that comes through. Mm-hmm. And B, you're offering all of that at an affordable price with materials that other larger companies, cannot compete with. I think that's a pretty nice little niche.
That's what I'm trying to go. I would love to say, you know, at this point that I would never go over the $100 mark. You know, that's really what I've shot for, that I'd love to produce these knives, every new design, but it's under $100, because personally, I used to find it really hard to justify spending over $100 for a knife. That was just a personal preference of mine. There's a lot of people that, you know, $100 is like, well, whatever, you know, I'll spend $100 on this knife, you know, no matter what. But, I really wanted to make them available to the most amount of people. I saw that there was sort of a gap between the, you know, the $40 to $50, you know, budget. There's a lot of competition in that arena with the D2 steel. And I'm sure at some point S35 will be the D2, you know, it'll probably get knocked down to the D2, and then there'll be another, S20V, you know, that's like the new bill that's surpassing M390. I'm sure some people would disagree with me, but I never want to go over the $100 mark, because I don't think we need to, you know.
I mean, I was just going to say, it's totally not necessary. It's a luxury item, you know, being a knife collector, which is what I am, is a materialistic pursuit, and you're collecting luxury items. I mean, you know, what am I ever going to use this thing for? But I love it.
Yeah, but you love it. Yeah.
But I'm sorry.
Real quick. But with that said, some of the makers that do these knives, and it really blows my mind, you know, that the way that they're able to do these custom knives.
Absolutely.
$1,000 for one of those. I completely understand why you'd want, because that really is an investment, and you feel really great having a knife like that, you know, because the quality is just top notch. I mean,
it's more than a knife at that point. When you're buying a handmade custom knife, it's more than a knife. You're buying the store. You're buying a little piece of that person. It's a bit of a work of art, but it's also designed because you can use it.
Absolutely.
But you were talking about S35 getting knocked down to D2 status eventually, and all of that will happen. But nothing is going to take away from the fact that S35VN is such a user friendly steel in every single way. And I used to think D2 is that way too. But you know, you get the rust thing. I don't. Now this is me talking like an old fart, you know, who's ready to die. But I mean, like, do we need anything more than M390?
Yeah,
do we need to kick S35EN down to D2 status.
Yeah, you don't need anything until it comes up, and then you say, oh well, maybe we did need it. You know, it's just it's one of those things where you don't. It's the best. I saw somewhere online where someone said, "Well, I'm old enough to remember when 440C was like the miracle steel." You know? Yeah. And now, if you see 440C on the knife, you'd be like, "Oh God, garbage!"
Yeah, I don't even cut the string off my collar with
that's
that.
That's exactly right. It would never cut the string. Yeah, but you know what? Just like buck knives, you know, they use this is a big thing. They use 420. You know, they use 420. I think in most of their models, and the way that he treat it, it's great. I mean, I've had quite a few buck knives and really happy with them. I mean, they hold an edge well. So, you know, it's just, I guess it's really how you process it and how you heat treat it. But, I noticed that S35VN is a great all around steel. it's higher, you know, it's high enough end where somebody feels like they're getting a really good steel for the price, and you could use it for a long time and you don't have to sharpen it very much.
So I have to ask,
sure.
How do you feel, how does Asher Knives feel about disclosing who manufactures the various models? Is this yeah. something that's open or what?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I have I use a smaller factory in Hong Kong. So I deal with the lady in Hong Kong. She's basically the rep that I deal with. I give her all of the designs that I make. You know, they have a design team that'll, you know, put that design and make sure it fits into what they do. Mm-hmm. Then they send it back to me. So she's my point of contact. And that was probably the easiest way for me to move the process forward was meeting, you know, this manufacturer. And they came on at a time where I lost a decent amount of money on a previous manufacturer after the classics.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just a rookie mistake on my end. And I trusted a bad manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky that I didn't lose a really good chunk of money, but I cut ties with them. I found this other, you know, manufacturer. They've been fantastic. Even though there was that language barrier issue with the washers, mm-hmm. Their quality is really great, and that's what I was looking for. And they're really eager to make me satisfied with each product they sell, or they send me.
I have to say, I know these are two different, these are manufactured by two different companies.
Yeah.
But you found, these are both really, really nicely made knives. And I was going to, attempt to, I mean, who knows? I don't know. I was going to try and guess, oh, maybe it's this company or that company. But yeah, I realized that I know such a slender slice of the pie, but, I have to say they're very, very nicely made. And, I like them very much. And
I appreciate that.
Also, you have this fixed blade knife that I just received, from Justin as well. What is your goal with the fixed blade? Before you answer that question, let me say what I like about this.
Sure.
I love the short handle. I am, especially in the winter time, an EDC fixed blade knife carrier.
Yeah.
And, one thing I like, and I wear it in the waistband, and one thing I like is a short handle, especially if it's rounded on that. So that it can rest like this, you know, on the small of my back, and I don't feel it. And
you really don't feel it.
Yeah. What were you going for with this 3.5-inch cutting edge, 4-inch bladed knife?
Yeah. So full disclosure on that model, I didn't design that myself. That was one of the models where it was offered to me. You know, they showed me the something they had already pre-made. I liked the EC53 steel.
Yeah.
And I went with it because it was a nice fixed blade model. I mean, it's fantastic. It's really quality made. I've gotten nothing but great feedback on that, you know, on that knife. I've used it myself. One of my, actually wanted to show you,
nice.
One of the guys that I've gotten to know pretty well from the EDC community is the Leather and Lumber Goods. His name's Chris. And he loves, you know, he ended up liking this knife a lot. He made a custom sheath for me. So
sweet.
this is my personal, you know, personal tracker.
So this is a tracker. This is I really dig this knife, man.
It is, man. It's comfortable. And I've never really been into I do like fixed blades a lot, but I've never been able to EDC a fixed blade because it's just not practical in what I do.
Yeah.
If I'm out, you know, outside all the time, I could see that. And that's what I was going for. Something that would take most jobs that you give it. If you're out, you know, wherever you are, it's still, you know, pretty comfortable to carry around and you don't mind EDCing it if you prefer to EDC a fixed blade. But I do have, you know, quite a few other designs for fixed blades. That was kind of a risk for me because I didn't know how well they would sell. But this one did, you know, that one did very well. I ran out of them actually. Nice. And I'm looking to do another run probably early next year of something similar, probably in a similar steel as well. Cause that DC-53 lasts. I mean, I cut down a tree. My wife and I went on a little, you know, little staycation about an hour away from Pittsburgh, and we went for a hike. I just wanted to try it out. I batoned a tree and used it for a walking stick, you know, and it was still sharp. I mean, it still split hairs, you know, so I was happy with that.
DC-53. I've never heard of DC-53.
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with it when I first saw it either, but after reading up on it, I decided to take a risk on it, and it's like a step up from D2. It has finer, you know, the grains are finer, so you can get a finer edge, and it holds just as long, if not longer, of an edge than D2, and it's just easier to sharpen. So that was always my gripe with D2, is I can never get it sharp enough. Mm. You know, you can get a great cutting working edge, you know, it'll cut all day long, it'll keep that edge, but I can never get it like, actually 440C, I love sharpening that, because you can get it like a razor scalpel, and you know, I don't mind touching up a blade here and there, but yeah, that's why I went with it, and it worked out, because I do like it a lot. I mean, it's a nice blade steel, and there's not much of it either. I mean, there's not much of it out there.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard much of it, but you know, there are lots of different blade steels. Recently, RWL, suddenly I started hearing about that.
Yeah.
So Asher Knives, where do you see yourself going with this? Is this going to be a family company? Is your son Asher?
I hope
so. All right. So tell me where you see the company itself in, you know, in the future, 10 years.
10 years. I really just want to be known for a good customer service and a quality knife. There's a lot of big companies that are known for, you know, known for that knife world. A lot of them are, you know, it's well deserved, obviously, because they've been around for so long and they do right by their customers. And being in real estate, that's my number one. I deal with people all day long. I talk to people. I deal with problems. I deal with, you know, fixed solutions. And I just want to always, I want the people that buy my knives to always be happy with the purchase and be satisfied with their knife whenever they use it. That's my biggest outlook. So if I can continue to do that and people still, you know, have the, if they're still eager to buy my designs, which is also a nice little pat on the back, because I always like when people like my designs, because it comes out of my head and I'm like, you know, I don't know if anyone else is going to like it. Right. You know, it's a big risk, but if they like the designs and they like the quality, and you know, my customer service is there, and they'll always talk to me. I deal with everybody that buys, you know, my knives, and I stand behind them because I can't sleep if I, you know, if somebody had an issue and I didn't, it would just drive me insane. You know, so I can't do that.
So where do people find your knives? Are you on any of the distributors, or go right to your website? What's up?
No, they go right to the website. Yeah, asherknives.com. And, you know, Instagram, Asher Knives. I'm on Reddit as well, Asher_Knives. That's the other kind of maybe downside to my personality, is I have to have my hands on everyone that I sell. I don't like to sell, you know, send 100 or 200 to a distributor, and then, you know, I don't know who's buying them. I don't know, you know, how they're sending them out. You know, if there's a nick on the blade, and they send it out to somebody, then all of a sudden on Instagram, somebody types in, "Oh, I just got an Asher Knives, and it's in terrible shape. You know, there's a nick on the blade, my blade's chipped or something." These things happen. I mean, you know, out of 500 knives, 30 or 50 of them could be, you know, in rough shape from the factory. And I just write that off as a cost of doing business at that point. But I won't send that out to somebody, you know, so I'm kind of anal about that. So sometimes I miss some things, obviously, you know, whenever I'm sending out a decent amount of orders, but I always make it right if I do.
I have no doubt that the people who are buying your knives are appreciative of that, you know, that you have a hands-on approach and that you care so much. I mean, after all, you are a knife guy, and you would not want to receive something that you're so excited. You know how pumped you get before you get a knife.
Exactly.
And then it shows up. And
yeah, you go wrong, and then it comes and it's not right. You know, well, anyway, it's bad.
It is because that echoes through, you know, through time, you know, and you don't want people that it takes a lot to get something back than it does to just maintain it. So
it does. Yeah. And it hurts. I take it personally, really. I mean, I know you shouldn't, but I do. Whenever there's a bad experience, I take it personally, and I want to make sure it's right. So,
well, that taking it personally is probably what makes it better. You know, puts the fire under your butt to make it right. Justin Cotton, I want to thank you so much. Justin Cotton of Asher Knives, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. And before I let you go, sir, I just want to get one word of advice. One little bit of advice that you might give it. To someone in your position. Oh, no, I'm asking you to give some.
Oh, okay. Someone, I thought you were going to give me some advice.
I'll take some advice. I think you need new headphones. No, I don't know. I have no advice for you. I want you to give advice to the people who might be in a similar position you were a couple of years ago, want to start a knife company.
Yeah. Really, if you have the amount of capital, and it doesn't take too much to start it out. But if you have a solid backing in that end, give yourself 2 months of, really looking into the process of from start to finish, from designing to manufacturing a knife. And you can reach out to me. You know, I'm okay with that. I'd be happy to the short notes of how to do that, because I don't think there's a lot of people out there that would tell you, you know, well, this is what I did, and this is how you have to do it on this, you know, down this line. This is what you have to look for in the manufacturers. So if you could find someone that will do that, that would be your best bet. But if you can't, just, you know, take 2 months if you're really serious about it, and try to follow the leads to get there. And you'll feel a lot more satisfied whenever you do get there, because now it's hard, but you know, you made it to that point. So it'll feel great.
A battle hard won. Well, thank you so much, Justin. Take care. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, sir.
Yeah, Bob, it was great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. If you've got questions or comments, call the 24/7 Knife Junkie listener line at 724-466-4487.
All right, back on the Knife Junkie podcast, episode number 154. And Bob, the first word that came to my mind about this interview was fun. I really enjoyed that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And oh, man, I love hearing people's, you know, that I bristle at the use of the word journey, but people who start knife companies really do embark on a journey. And it's very cool for me to hear of Justin's story, going from just a knife guy who, you know, likes and buys and uses knives, to a guy who's actually making them. And to me, you know, I can't help but think, I mean, I see this in my own life, but I see this clearly in a lot of these people that we're talking to, is taking experiences from your day job, from your life, from the other non-knife stuff. And, you know, taking the lessons and the attributes distilled from those experiences and putting them to work in your passion project, you know, and, you know, no doubt Justin is a smart guy, and he's gotten a lot of those smarts from working in the real estate game, and he's putting them all to use in his passion, making knives. So to me, that's inspirational.
Well, and I really loved your selfish question at the end about what would someone do if they were interested in starting a knife company? I don't know. I'm just asking for someone.
Say there's this guy, and he looks just like me.
Yeah, his name's Bob. You know, what would Bob do?
Book full of designs. No. I'm just getting a vicarious buzz from all these other people making knives and really enjoying getting their knives in hand. And Jim, this one, the classic, I mentioned it on last week's podcast. This is so up your alley, sir.
Yeah.
So,
nice-looking knife. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've received anything in the mail yet, but it's not this, but next year it might be this.
So. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, and as we've talked about once or twice before on some other podcast episodes, I think, Justin, as you said, very smart guy, and looking at that niche or niche in the marketplace, that sub $100 price point that can capitalize on that. So, some smarts up there too.
Yeah, I got to say that was a smart move too, because people look at the sub $100 range of folding knives, and they have certain expectations, and using titanium and S35VN and this like beautiful construction kind of blows those expectations out of the water. Right. And you know, I guess when you're starting a new business, you want to disrupt things a little bit, and absolutely, I think that's what these do. Nicely done, sir.
All right. Again, you can find him, AsherKnives.com online, AsherKnives.com. For Bob the Knife Junkie, I'm the knife newbie, Jim Person, thanking you for joining us on this episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, thenifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on thenifejunkie.com/Instagram, and join our Facebook group at thenifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@thenifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487, and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.